Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. And it's Monday again, and it's Edwin again. And hang on to your hats, Edwin.
Hang on to your toupee, Martin. I pose to you the question, which is more foolish, Martin? Opening the door of an aeroplane at 1,000 feet because you wanted to get a bit of fresh air? Or bidding at an auction with dual dwellings, or let's say a house and granny flat, without not knowing whether or not the granny flats council approved. Which one do you think is more foolish?
Well, I was going to say the opening of the fresh air vent on the airplane, i.e., the door, probably has shorter term risks. But actually buying something without actually understanding what you're buying has a long-term risk, doesn't it? It really does, because you don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah, look, it does. Look, I'm not an air hostess or cabin crew. So, yeah, my understanding is that there are safety measures, right? Maybe one of our followers is a cabin crew member, ex, whatever, and they can let us know. But my understanding is that there are safety measures. Isn't that what they do, this cross-checking and all these performance art that they do whilst when you board the plane and you're taking off and they're telling you this way and that way? The plane's going down, you're in the shit, Might as well put your head between your legs and kiss your ass is what I say. But for the same token, there's safety measures when you're buying a house. But do these safety measures operate, or are they operational all of the time? And I can say they're not. What do you reckon, Martin?
Oh, I agree. It's quite interesting, as somebody who's traveled a lot on airplanes, it amazes me how many people just really ignore the, all of the stuff that's going on, the theater, as you say. If you're a regular flyer, then you sing, oh, I know all of this. But the fact is, there are very few people who are regular property purchasers, right? And therefore, it's even more important to make sure that you do the checks and you know where the exit is, all of those things, or the equivalent of buying a property. In fact, this last week, I've had some really interesting one-to-one conversations with people. And there are two themes that have come through. Firstly, buyer's regret. So people who actually committed and bought without doing due diligence. And it's amazing how often that comes up. And the other thing that's come up this weekend, which I think is quite interesting, is that the mortgage rate cliff thing, it's only just starting to bite. So there are people now thinking ahead over the next 6 or 9 months and seeing interest rates going to continue to, be high. And they know that they've got this fixed rate that they're on at the moment going to come to an end over the next 6 to 12 months. And they're starting to ask themselves, what the hell should I do? Because they've started to get the message that it's unlikely the interest rates are going to drop back down to where they were previously. So it's a bit like, some of this stuff is possibly going to happen. So it's a bit like, in those emergency scenarios in the airplane, you've always got to think the unthinkable.
Yeah, look, you do. And there's always the fools or the idiots in there. That will get up to all sorts of shenanigans. I mean, in this case, it's in terms of the property, what I mean to say is the foolish policies that are thrown left, right, and center. Look, as we keep on saying, what's next? There's generational mortgages. There's we've got the government's not listening whatsoever to slowing down the influx of the immigration policy. Construction's really got to really start cranking and firing on all eight cylinders if we're going to get anywhere in the next three to five years. So I'd imagine that the question that a lot of these people that you'd be talking to, Martin, is also they're probably asking themselves is, where do I go? Where do I go? What are the choices? And this is what I've been saying to a lot of my family and a lot of friends, close family and friends, is you've got to make the sacrifice. You've got to make the sacrifice, short term, medium term, and long term. You've got to assess your position, your situation. I mean, I've got family members as well that are holding on to high mortgages, and they're nearing retirement, and yet they've still got a huge mortgage over their heads. How do you pay? Yeah, and really, realistically, what they're looking at is working for an extra 5 years, not necessarily in their profession, because they've more or less become redundant after a certain age, but getting other jobs in order to maintain the lifestyle and maintain the properties. This is where people have got to really take a sober look at the situation, and as I said, they've got to make a sacrifice, Martin. People have got to make sacrifices. Unfortunately, we are where we are because of the stupid and backwater policies that the government's been making over the last two decades. And as you and I have been saying, the fix has been in for a very, very long time. And they're only just going to continue to throw things at it. And it's going to really be an issue and put a lot of pressure more on the renters than homeowners, because at least as a homeowner, you've got you've got a roof over your head, right? Be it under a lot of financial stress and a lot of financial pressure. But where do you go as a renter when you get turfed out in your house and the property is being sold? And I mean, there's tent cities and all sorts of things that we've spoken about appearing in a lot of main cities across Australia.
Yeah, well, expect the unexpected. If you can get a earthquake in Melbourne, and if you can get the Western Australian Premier suddenly resigning, anything's possible. But the fact is that a lot of people that I speak with, as you say, who have a property at the moment, are really now beginning to realize that this is not going to go well. But there are limited options, such limited options. Now, in some cases, people are able to refinance. And I made a show yesterday about some of the changes to underwriting standards that some of the banks have brought in. They're sort of being more, quote, flexible. Well, they're being flexible because, of course, what it does is allow them to be able to continue to make their profits and, extend and pretend. But it doesn't necessarily solve the borrower's problem necessarily. If you do decide to put your property up and get out and, pay the bank off, then you've got to find somewhere to live. And with the rental market where it is, that's a problem. The migration of 700,000 over 2 years or whatever the latest number from Treasury is going to put more pressure. And, of course, the AFR came out, and whether you saw the article, that basically it's all down to supply. We haven't built enough stuff. No. The reason we got such a big problem is we've got this massive flood of migrants coming in, and that's putting a whole lot more pressure on at a time when interest rates are rising. So it's not a single factor issue. It's a multifactorial issue here that's driving things. But people are beginning to have to make really quite difficult and quite bad decisions. And, I was talking to somebody the other day who said, well, we were sort of thinking we can probably muddle through 2022, 2023, and, next year we'll figure out what we're going to do. But suddenly that D-Day is coming up a bit quick, right? Here we are in halfway through the year, and Phil Lowe's still saying, well, we might have to put interest rates up even more to deal with the inflationary pressure. So it's really getting more and more complicated for people, and there are no simple, straightforward answers. And what I'm finding is that the bottom line, I think, is that we probably will see some increase in listings later in the year, maybe in the spring, but there are no simple solutions, and it really is as complicated a situation I think I've ever seen.
Okay, it is, but then again, Martin, we could do as our big brother does, print some more money.
It's been done before.
Raise the debt ceiling, Martin. Raise the debt ceiling.
Yes.
So, a couple of trillion dollars between mates, Seriously, come on.
Well, there is, of course, the old we'll go around the houses once again, and we'll flood the markets with more liquidity, and we'll give some more incentive to first-time buyers and all those things. It's interesting, in New Zealand, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand just issued some data that showed that first-time buyers as a proportion of total borrowing was actually as high as it's been for quite some time. That's because they've, you know, messed around with some of the parameters and things like that. So there's always the next fix. But of course, none of these fixes actually address the fundamental structural issues that we've got. It's all about extending and pretending, keeping the bubble going a bit longer, and hoping that it's somebody else's problem when it goes wrong.
Oh, well, that's right. Fingers crossed, Martin. Fingers crossed that the that those numbers do start climbing. We won't see that change until we start getting closer to spring. We're going to talk about it a bit later on, but the numbers are still, spiraling downward. It's a slow leak in terms of, it's the numbers are deflating. That's for sale listing numbers across Sydney, and home numbers is, what we pay a lot of attention to. They're becoming lower and lower. But it's similar trend last year and the year before that. But 2021 was when we started seeing a lot of people fall into that trap of FOMO, and then come spring there were a lot more listings on market. So there was shifts and changes. But we'll see what happens this time around. But look, I'm a little bit concerned as to how much more are these immigration floodgates going to be open. We've been getting a lot of chatter from mainland China, and two cities, particularly Shenzhen, which is the city next to Hong Kong, and we've got also chatter from Hangzhou, which is where Alibaba is located. And in these cities, what's happened is, because there's been a huge slowdown in the construction industry, you've got highly skilled engineers, architects, and other professions in the building industry that are literally being, these are the senior partners, senior architects and engineers. They're basically literally, got their pay got cut by 50%. Now, one of the things that we got to take into consideration is that these individuals, they get paid huge amounts of money over there. They earn a lot. They are in the in your top tier of your middle class. So they've got a lot of money. So they're thinking along the ways of, well, what do we do? Do we stay here and try to also pay down on the big mortgages that they would have as well on 50% income, or do we start looking at further afield? In other words, looking to start migrating, which goes back to what we've been talking about for a while now, which is that run philosophy. Get out quickly, send your kids overseas, whether it be Canada or Australia, which is the flavor of the month, and look at those areas and start the journey, the migration journey into those areas. So, that's we're going to keep an eye on to see what's happening there. Of course, the juniors in these cities, they're literally just being told, go. They've got no pay. They've just been let go. So there's a lot of pain being felt over there in China in terms of their economy. So we're sort of talking amongst the group, Dusty and the group and Dusty and the gang, and we're sort of feeling that we're going to get a lot more high net worth individuals that are going to start filtering through, coming through they've got their ways and means because of the connections, coming through and start going to driving the prices of the homes, the high end of town, you could say, your North Shores, your eastern suburbs, where they like to live and congregate. Those prices could be shifting further north, Martin. That's in respect to Chinese mainland chatter, and the local WeChat chatter is they're still hot to trot with properties. They're talking about the fact that if you recall, they started calling the bottom of the market from last year, and what they're saying amongst the four or five groups that we're monitoring is these are the local groups. What they're saying is basically if you missed out on buying property because now it's getting getting ridiculously high if you miss out in your Sydney regions, start looking further afield. So this goes back to what we've been saying for the last couple of weeks, Martin. We've got this you know, people flooding into the city or closer to the CBD, which inflated the cost of living, which by way of rentals and also home prices and all the incentives that the government was throwing at people as well, because yeah, you know, these people are coming from the regions where you've got regional towns basically being decimated because banks clearing out and they're going through a hard time, and also we've discussed the issues around natural disasters. So, but now what they're saying is the Wichita Chatters, which is what you and I've been talking about for a while, is that people are going to start looking at a regional. These are the investors. So we're talking predominantly investors because this is what the local Wichita Chatter groups are. They're individuals that invest in property. That's what the local chatter is going to do. So it's, it's shifting sands, Martin. It's just shifting sands. But obviously, as you say, is if there's a natural, or if there's people start thinking about the pressure that they're facing, and they're already talking, to yourself and to others, it means that the greater population also talking. Let's hope that the numbers start to climb up, because as I said, with the amount of demand that's out there in the market, it's that we are seeing on the grassroots levels, it's really driving prices as far in some areas beyond the 2021 figures that we saw. But yet, if we continue to spiral downward in for sale listing numbers in Sydney, we're going to see some incredible prices soon, but if those new properties start coming on the market towards the end of winter, going into spring, well, things are gonna change. But I still think that we need to see double the amount of for sale listings on market to really stop this whole emotional fear of missing out scenarios been playing out, and predominantly because of the overseas interests and the local chatterers, the local investors that are going hell for leather because of the rental return. And again, let's emphasize that the groups that we're talking about are investors that have got an uncanny way of almost doubling, and in some cases almost tripling the rental returns, because they're not your conventional property investors or landlords.
Yeah, well, you make a really interesting point about regional, because I was talking to someone the other day in and around Thurl, which of course is a regional centre, and prices in Thurl have continued to fall, but they've started to notice exactly what you're saying, that there's a new class of potential buyers coming and looking out in these regional areas, where they're actually looking for properties with a significant number of bedrooms, where they can then actually package those up and offer the accommodation. And Thurl is not that far from Wollongong, where there's a big university, there's a big student population. And so they're now looking at this as potentially a way of generating significant income. And it's shaping and changing the way that the local market in and around Thurl is now working, because basically there is a new class of prospective purchaser that really a few months ago wasn't looking because then prices were too high, but they've come back 10 to 15% down now, and it's just changed the whole landscape. So I think that's just a microcosm of what we're seeing, and I think we're going to see the same sort of pressure in a number of regional areas. And because it's investing in investment property that they're interested in, it doesn't matter almost where it is if the numbers work.
Well, that's correct. And apart from saying we are the news, Martin, we are ahead of the mainstream. Look, yes. It is what it is. We're there. I'm being called all sorts of things on Twitter and other social media platforms just because I'm exposing a lot of the stuff that's going on. I mean, we talk about it. It's not that I like what's going on. It's not that I enjoy watching renters get taken for, you know, for a ride. I don't. It makes my skin crawl just to see some of these rental accommodations out there, and also you see some of these. So some of the stuff that's, these tent cities that are popping up, which is my number four prediction from the beginning of the year. And I was talking about it, we were talking about it even before when you and I were sharing videos on our, on Twitter and on the show as to the state and condition of what people call granny flats, which is just makeshift old shitty, fibro, asbestos riddled garages turn into makeshift so-called granny flats. I mean, this is where we are, and things are only going to get worse before they can get better. But one of the other things that people just got to be careful of, Martin, is in terms of getting worse before it gets better, is this this FOMO that's out there. It is beyond belief. I mean, in that domain article that I shared with you. I mean, the headline reads, first-time buyer beats 26 others to a one-bedroom unit with $847,000 bid. I mean, this thing was, I think they were guiding at 650 from memory, from the article. Well, what does that tell you? There's 26 underbidders, Martin. 26 underbidders. It's crazy stuff. This is what I call, slipstream bidding. It's where you get caught up emotionally in the frenzy, and it's like when we used to ride our push bikes and used to ride behind trucks, and you get caught in the slipstream. It was easy, but it wasn't so easy when the bloody truck put its brakes on and you weren't paying attention, right? So this is you can get caught up in the slipstream, and this is, I mean, it's just frantic what goes on out there. And this is something that people just got to be careful of, Martin, getting caught up in the emotion.
Well, you and I have spoken about this a few times, and I'll just underscore again that in the bidding situation at auction, people can actually get, well, frankly, unrooted, right? They basically, any thought that they had about what they're going to pay as a maximum can go out the window. They get caught up in the emotion and get swept along. And of course, that is what agents have traditionally relied on to drive prices higher, right? And the trouble is that the psychology and the enthusiasm, all those other things, sweeps away the cold, hard logic of what a property is actually truly worth. And that's a real problem.
Well, that's correct. And look, it's like this, right? So you've got a property, let's use round figures, right, that you're wanting to get $2 million for. And this is the ploy, this is the misleading, deceptive conduct of many agents dabble with underquoting. So if you know for a fact that there's only two people, let's say there's two people that can genuinely afford the $2 million and are interested in the $2 million property, when you've got two people at a house outside of the neighbors, the sticky beak, well, there's not a lot of emotion, is it? It's more of a mind game. It's more of a there's more of a thought process going. But if you walk back 2 weeks from the date and you start advertising a guide of 1.6 to 1.7, knowing that the vendor doesn't want anything less than $2 million, well, you're gonna fool a lot more people, and people are gonna think that the selling agent is is a professional, that's a trustworthy professional. A bit of an oxymoron there, but nevertheless, that's what I'm thinking, right? And they're going to come along. Now, regardless of the fact that the agent knows that those people cannot afford to buy the property and that they're going to be priced out, it changes the dynamics, because the other two parties that can afford the $2 million are interested in paying the $2 million, are going to see 10 others or 15 others there with the betting numbers ready to throw their hand up in the air, and the dynamics change, right? Because they don't know that there's really only two. They think that potentially it could be seven, eight others. So it changes the dynamics. And that's what this does. And then they get caught up in the frenzy. And then people that can only afford the 1.7, 1.8, you know, will get dragged and will get dragged into that slipstream. And unfortunately, before you know it, they're also throwing their hands up in the air at 1.9, and closer to the mark. So that's the whole psychology or part of it, as you and I have discussed many times. But yeah, people keep on falling for it. One of the interesting things, Martin, when I was reading that article and then I posted that tweet on Twitter, referencing that article, is how, like, on the weekend, Dusty and I, we were looking at properties that are not even registered on domain or in on real estate on the portals, because there are other apart from the WeChat chatterers, we're finding with our contacts of real estate agents of the different ethnicity that we're finding that the general chatter amongst them is that the older generation, be it Vietnamese, be it Lebanese, be it Middle Eastern, be it Greeks or Italians, or the older generation, don't necessarily want a bunch of people trampling through their homes, as you and I have spoken about before. There are groups or agencies that are specializing in these different ethnic groups, and these properties aren't being registered on domain and real estate. So the question is how many more properties are really out there for sale, right? And how many more are going to come on, and how many more are generally off market? So that's why I put that tweet up, and I said, well, you know, everybody else got caught up in the frenzy, but Dusty and I went out looking at property being listed by real estate agents of an ethnic background, looking after their ethnic clients of same ethnic background. But it's a very much a private affair. Now, obviously, their expectations are still very high in terms of wanting to achieve a certain price. But the best thing there is that they're negotiable, and you don't have 26 underbidders emotionally behind you pushing driving the price up needlessly and foolishly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have this view too, that the normal property portals only have a proportion of currently available properties listed, right? And it's hard to know what the mix is and how many, but we know that there is a whole bunch of properties that are silently listed. So they're not actually publicly available at all, but agents know about them. And as you say, some agents are also using alternative channels and alternative platforms to attract particular groups. So there is probably a larger number of properties available than actually the official statistics are showing at the moment. And that's probably something that is more distorted than it's ever been, simply because of the rise of social media, because of the fact that the property market is all over the place, because some agents are jealously holding on to leads that they have, waiting for that right person to drop on them, rather than actually use the standard, you know, portal strategy to create interest. And there are vendors out there who basically have said to agents, look, I'm not going to list my property formally, but if somebody comes up with an offer that's, you know, up here somewhere, then I'm in the market. And I don't know how many of those there are, but I suspect there's quite a big number.
Look, there are. On the weekend, we inspected a 3-bedroom house in Nashville, right? That's a hot area. So a three-bedroom house in Nashville, a five-bedroom house in Greenacre, you know, close to Bankstown, two-bedroom townhouse in Nashville as well. There was a two-bedroom apartment in Rockdale. And, we also went all the way to God's country, the Shire, to inspect a house there. And now there were others that, different agents wanted to show us, but we just didn't have the time and we didn't have the clients in the particular areas that they had. So I know about genuine off-listing markets that I've spoken about for many years as to why they keep them genuine off market. It's because, the people are elderly. They've got goods that are valuable, more of sentimental value than monetary value, and they don't want, some families tend to take their kids and I've even seen some people take their bloody dogs to, through homes that open inspections. You got all these things. So there's those hurdles that agents have to, climb over. And a lot of people are very private. And there's also obviously from the legal side where I've been involved in assisting people, you got divorces or you got very private affairs or it's, homes that are tied up with other, they're cross collateralized with businesses. So it's not your straightforward deals. And of course you've got your properties that lend themselves more to developers than to have your neighbors, every man and his dog in your neighborhood trampling through your home, just to have a look-see, when the property really lends itself more to a developer. So you've got all these things, but it's interesting how of late over the last couple of months. I mean, we know I've been sharing about the WeChat Chatter side of things, the local Asian community portals that we look through, but it's been interesting how we're finding out there are other ethnic groups, and you also got real estate agents that are family friends, and in a lot of the other ethnic groups, a lot of it's people are very private, and they are very they're elderly, the retirees, they just don't want to go through all the BS. And basically, as you say, Martin, this is my price point. If you can get me somebody there, I'll decide and I'll move and I'll sell without the fuss of having every man in stock through my house.
Absolutely. I think this is a very important theme, and I think we'll probably see more of it ahead. Now, the second article that we want to discuss is back on the old DA question, right? When is information not disclosed that should have been disclosed, and when is a property not a property?
Oh, look, exactly. This is, obviously, because of my despondency, my anger, my frustration as to how the governments haven't really looked after the tenants. And now people are basically taking advantage of tenants and those in need. I really got to the point where I've just had enough. I've reached the level, Martin, where this is it. I won't say what council it is. I won't mention what it is until I get the right findings. I'll put something out on Twitter because there are so many properties that are actually falling through the cracks. But the bigger question to that is why not so much why they're falling through the cracks, but are they purposely or unintentionally falling through the cracks, right? Because of these the non-compliance issues that a lot of properties don't adhere to, and a lot of it's to do with studios and grand flats. I mean, Parapower put one out. It's a bloody cubby house. The original owner basically set that up as a sleep out for the for the then teenage kids, and now it's being rented out as a studio for $320 a week. This isn't the property that I'm discussing here today. This is just an observation of another property that was put up in the Pennant Hills area. This particular one, I decided to do some historical checks on this house, because the so-called granny flat, because when I looked at the floor plan, it was dead obvious that the so-called studio was the old fibro garage that had just been retrofitted into a studio / granny flat. So I did a bit of historical background on it, and rang up the council, and I was talking to the town planner, and it so happens that in 2016 this particular property had a DA application lodged into council in 2016 for a studio. But talking to this town planner, the studio or the application, she couldn't tell me too much, but the application was more for what we would call in the past what we would call a media room or a music room or just a sleep out. In other words, it wasn't an application for a permanent dwelling. In other words, it's literally a studio, right? As what you and I would consider to be the original term of studio. In other words, no cooking facilities, no, in some cases you could say not even a shower, maybe a bit of plumbing, but not necessarily a shower. So it couldn't be used or rented out as a permanent residency. So that was in 2016. Nothing had been done since then. So you got approved for that, allegedly. So he got approved for that, but there was nothing further said or done. In other words, there was no application for a construction certificate, and let alone an occupation certificate. Right? That's as far as the council knew. Back in 2016, that's it. That's where it stopped. They didn't even know that this dwelling had been finished, and had been finished up as a granny flat. That was surprised, to say the least. Now, looking at the historical data on CoreLogic, this was advertised, this property was advertised and sold in 2022 as a fully renovated home and large studio. But the what they reference to here is a large studio is, although they're not calling it a granny flat, but look, You don't have to be a rocket scientist or Einstein to figure out what the agents would have been saying. Let alone when you walk into the place, you see it with a kitchen, a fully fledged kitchen, and you also see it with a toilet, shower, laundry, bathroom, combination laundry bathroom area. Well, you're going to think it's a granny flat, right? You're going to think a studio as a slash granny flat, because the studio and granny flat is sort of come together over the years as being the same thing. So, but they also advertised it for a permanent rental, and back in it started being renting at 2022 as at $290 a week, and currently it was advertised at $320 a week, and they achieved $310 a week. Well, let's see how long that lasts for, because what I can say is that the council are going to be knocking on the door and of the current owner and finding out where things are at. It's unfortunate. I may get some backlash here because technically, on the one hand, somebody needed this accommodation, but is it better? The question that I post is it better to have somebody there in an unsafe environment, or report it to the council and have it and how to revert back to the music room slash studio of what it was, what the DA was for. I mean, it's a bit of a dilemma, but I don't know. I got more yeses on get council to open an investigation. So I just took the Twitter poll and it went that way, Martin.
Well, you know, you've got to ask the question, what's the point of certification? And, you know, why do we actually have these processes in place? Well, it's obviously to make sure that property that people live in is fit to live in. And that's really important, you know, whether it's asbestos or whether it's fire alarms or whether it's something else. There is purpose behind the systems and processes that have been in place. But also, for as long as you can remember, and I can remember, people always try and get around the system. And they'll, fly close to the wind, and then they'll create it's not really full time, you know, it's just temporary, you know, it's just storage. It's just, as you say, music room or whatever. And then it's sort of a bit later, it morphs into something else, something else, something else, something else. And then bingo, now you've got a fully fledged property that you can let separately. And then, of course, nobody necessarily asks the question. So there is a really important purpose behind the regulatory processes that exist at the moment. And that also means, of course, that if you are actually thinking about buying a property, it's really important for you to know whether it actually has the right approvals. Because if you buy something without approvals, you are actually opening yourself to risk down the line. If, for example, the council then comes knocking, or if in fact you are then required to demolish it or to otherwise retrofit things that it didn't have, that's a cost that you probably weren't calculating. So there is purpose to protect the existing people who are living in the property, but also prospective purchasers too. So that's why I think these things are important. But, you know, and then current environment, people are skating around the edges, aren't they? They're trying to find anything that they can let, you know, as you've shown in a few past shows, you know, things that you probably shouldn't be living in. Well, people are living in them.
Yeah, they are, and they're charging a fortune for them. And it's the tenants that suffer. They're suffering on both ends. And as you say, there's the regulations. There are codes, and all to do with safety, or all to do with short term and long term illnesses that you can. That you can get from unfit dwellings, and so on. You know, we'll keep our viewers posted as to what happens and whether or not this particular council has got the balls to really do something about it. I've taken a report number, and I'll be checking in from week to week to see what they found and what's happened.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, it's worth following that up. Now let's talk about the numbers, because the numbers, as you say, are down again. So if you look at Sydney last week, we were at 14,850. This week we're at 14,667. And looking at the differential movement between houses and apartments, it's actually quite interesting, because there was actually a further fall as a proportion on houses relative to apartments.
Yes, and it is the beginning of the week, and it'll be interesting to see what we get to towards the end of the week. By the end of the week, last Friday, we had 15,000, just over 15,000, I think it was 15,007, and around about 6,430-something homes listed for sale. The other side of this story, obviously, the listing numbers going down is there's not a lot of sales, right? There's not a lot of sales in the Sydney area if you're basing it just on the domain numbers, and there wouldn't be much more across REA and other portals. There's close to 17,000 selling agents in Sydney, and do the math and work out how much on average the selling agents are earning. So the industry continues to to be in a lot of pain. There was a report of the agents in Brisbane, in the Brisbane region. They were there was a drop off of about 20% real estate agents in Brisbane. Is that, you know, I think that's the beginning of what I also predicted at the beginning of this year, that there will be a 20-30% drop off in real estate agents and agencies closing down by the end of the year, because the low sales numbers is just not sustainable to keep an office going, no matter where you are. So, and there are some offices that are reaping greater rewards in certain areas because they basically own that patch, own that suburb, and others starving and dropping their commissions down from your 1.5s that we were averaging down to 1%. In some cases, people are just picking up listings and just on as long as the vendor pays for the marketing fees, which they jack that up a little bit, they'll literally list it on just so that they can have a signboard in that area so that they won't lose territory or much more territory to other agencies. So it's basically a seller's market, you could say, from always achieving higher prices in the sale of the property, and also squeezing the agents to absorb the marketing fees and do a little bit more for the vendors in order to get the listing.
Well, it's interesting to talk about those fees. I was talking to family the other day who were talking to an agent, and the agent had come back and said, "Well, I can do you for 1.25%." And they actually, the family sent me a message saying, "Is that a good rate? Is that a bad rate?" And I said, "Oh, it's not particularly great. And why don't you go back and see what you can negotiate? You know, so don't just take it as read that that's the number is the number." And in fact, on my encouragement, they went back and pushed really hard. They actually managed to get 0.65% as the rate, which I thought that was pretty good. Now, of course, whether the agent will do any work for that, of course, is the other question. I said, it's not just about the fee, it's about the work that you're going to get. So be clear about what it is that the agent is going to do or not do for that money. And they had a separate agreement with regard to marketing costs, but it just shows you there is some flexibility and elasticity at the moment on fees that agents are prepared to take property on, because they're desperate to get any listing, they're desperate to get any of those boards out in the area. So it just shows you that it really is at the moment a significantly opportune time to push those agents really hard.
Look, it is, but again, like you said, you pay peanuts, you get monkeys as well, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It comes back to the property. It comes back to a number of things. What is the agent going to do? The agent could charge 3%, but they could be doing some fantastic marketing, putting together a great marketing strategy, and also the preparation and also the contacts. So that extra, let's say that extra 1.5% on the other side, across a $2 million, $2 million property, that's $15,000. So that extra $15,000 that you're paying by way of commission could achieve, if they're going to really work their butts off, could get you an extra $200-$300 on the other side because of the contacts, because of the network, because of the ethnicity, because of the relationship with certain ethnic groups that would pay a bit more to be in a particular area. So yeah, you got to assess everything. But look, as I said, there's I think it comes back to the character and the history of the agent as well. But you know, but at the end of the if you've got three of your three top agents in front of you, and they've all got history, well then that's it. That's when you throw the bone in, and then you just let them go all out and see who comes back with a better better deal for you.
Yeah, absolutely right. Let's just touch on Melbourne quickly, because the same trend there. So last week, 22704. This week, 22014. So, you know, going in the same direction and the same mix of falls as well. So it's pretty much consistent. And also noting that the auction numbers are still, well, pretty low, aren't they?
Yeah, look, they are. They've come up a little bit, not much. there's 10 more properties. So there's still the enthusiasm or the confidence for vendors to get what they really want is not there. So the stories of the mainstream media of properties rising value still not filtering through to the vendors, because otherwise we would again be closer to the 1,000, if not over the 1,000 mark. We could get there. We could get there if these stories keep on being pumped out by the mainstream media. Talking about auctions, Martin, just a story came to mind of up in Darwin. One of our followers, diligent followers, Nigel, called me today, and he and he said there was an auction going to happen at a property there up at in Darwin somewhere, and two houses down there was a housing commission, a state-owned property that been ran out. Badly looked after. The grass was about 2 foot high or something. This is how keen some agents are. This agent that's got the property coming up for auction, two houses up from that house that's badly looked after, was a bit concerned as to the way the streetscape was looking. So apparently on the weekend the agent bought around his own ride-on mower and mowed the lawns in that derelict house further down the road, just to clean things up in preparation for the upcoming auction. So agents like that, you gotta give them they're really looking out for the interests of their vendor, right?
That's hilarious. Well, it shows taking it very seriously. I would say that's a bit beyond the call, but maybe they knew something about the impact in the local area. Very interesting. Very good.
Then again, Martin, what do you do if you know that the neighbours of the house that you're going to auction, there's a meth lab there or something? What, you go and give them $100, tell them to go to McDonald's for the hour of the auction? I mean, who knows? I mean, it could also work the other way, right? So if you got close association to bikies and you want to buy the house, you just call your mates to go to the house next door and pretend that they live there. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly right. Sydney Rentals 11072, so still knocking around there and considering more apartments than houses, as you perhaps expect given the current market. So no great great shakes there. And I guess as we come to the end of the show, other than the tip of the week, don't open airplane doors in flight, which is one probably it's worth remembering, you've got another one.
We've had a lot to do with demolition works across four sites over the last couple of weeks. And look, talking to the companies that we use, tipping fees and dumping fees, or the dumping bin fees and also the tipping fees that the tips charge, they're going up. So if you got some rubbish around the house, that your local council won't take, and if you don't, find out how many local council pickups you've got, because I dare say, Martin, moving forward, even the local councils, if you in some areas some suburbs of Sydney, you can actually get two pickups throughout the year. You know, some even three. In the mountains, it's only one a year. In the area that we're in, but I dare say that from your 2 cubic meters that they will allow of furniture and just you know, household items, I'd say that could even go down to 1 cubic meter, which is basically bugger all, and because tipping fees and the removal of rubbish is just going to go through the roof. So take advantage of this time. These are from the different operators that we use across Sydney. They're all telling us the same story. So get rid of your rubbish. But it makes sense, right? Land taxes are going up in Melbourne, so local councils here in New South Wales have to do something to increase their budget. Poor little bunnies, that just because they've got to make up the money for the next 7% pay rise for the next financial year, right?
Absolutely right. Well, yeah, that's good advice, and you know, a bit of a clean out is always a good thing. I mean, I can tell you, having spent the last few months cleaning out the properties before I sold it, you know, it's quite cathartic to actually go through that process. And it's interesting to note that there are still quite good deals. If you've got an old fridge, for example, there are entities in some parts of New South Wales where they'll actually come and pick it up and pay you money to take it away, which is amazing, really. But so again, it's just a matter of you know, taking the initiative and getting on with it rather than actually just letting it fester, right? And I'll tell you something just briefly. When I was clearing out the property before I sold it, I discovered there some stuff that we'd brought from the UK 27 years ago that we'd moved from one house to another house and was still in the garage and we hadn't touched it. And I'm thinking, there's an object lesson there, right? If you've not touched it in the last year or so, chances are you're never going to touch it. So this may be a good opportunity to do a little bit of cleaning up and tidying up. And as I say, you'll feel better for doing it.
Yeah. Our policy in our household is, if you haven't worn it for over 12 months, well, it goes. We've got other things around that if we don't use for so long, it goes. But the only place that's sacred, Martin, that no matter how long I've had it for, is the shed. Nobody, Dusty, cannot set foot in the shed. I've got shit there that's I'm going to use. Maybe not next month. I could use it in a year or 2 years' time. I don't know where I'm going to use the the old copper elbows or whatever, but I'm going to use it somewhere. I'll make a sculpture out of it so Dusty knows.
Excellent. Yeah, well, some things are sacred, aren't they? You know. Excellent, Edwin. Well, thank you very much once again. Great to catch up as always, and always plenty to shoot the breeze over. And we'll do another one. Hey, we might do a live one next week. If you're up for it, we might make it a live one.
No, definitely. Same time, or will we go?
Yeah, maybe we might go slightly later. I'll figure that out, and I'll put up a pre-show alert on the channel and let you know what the time will be if it's a bit later. But we'll maybe do a live one. The reason for that is that next week is going to be good for me. The week after, I'm expecting all my stuff to land here. So I might go off air for a few days while I'm surrounded by all this stuff that I packed in Sydney a couple of months ago. And I've now got to unpack it and sort it out. So that we'll see. Anyway, but next week should be good.
I've got a tip for you, Martin. Hmm. Yeah, call your local dumpster.
Exactly.
You might be throwing out half of the stuff that you took over to England.
Well, that's always a risk, but hopefully I was quite methodical. But, you know, you never know. You never know. I think it'll be an interesting 2 or 3 weeks as the end of the process finally arrives and everything lands here. So, but at least I'll have the full studio back rather than the skimpy stuff that I got here at the moment. So that'll be fun in due course. Have a good week. We'll see you soon.
Ciao.
Cheers. Bye-bye.